Welcome to Winning It Life with Gregory Ricks on iHeartRadio. Happy Saturday. I am your co-host, James Parker. Coming up on the show today, we're going to continue the series of Women Winning It Life topics. Right now, we're going to talk, today's episode, we're going to talk about how do you handle your financial planning through a divorce? What's the wife entitled to? What happens to the 401k? What happens to the Social Security, alimony, child support, prenup, credit card debt, bankruptcy, mortgage? Another topic we're taking care of today. So you've been plowing some money into a 401k all these years. Now what? Our guest in the second hour is Dwayne Stein. He is the chef of Mortgage Gumbo, our little spinoff show that comes on after us. He's going to review, we have to do this once a year, the Ten Commandments to get a home loan. And then he's going to be a big part of our Janet Yellen discussion. The Federal Reserve Chairman announced that she's staying pat on rates. They are not going up. Market reacted, went on a sugar high, already coming back down from that too. If you have a financial situation and you're not quite sure what to do, you better call Gregory, 504-260-0995. You can also send us a message via the Gregory Ricks & Associates app or email us gregory@gregoryricks.com. So Gleason Graw is today. It's only $5 to get in. It's at the Gleason House over in Mid-City, gleasongraw.org. Finally here. We've been telling you about it for a couple of weeks, but it's a great cause. Another big event that we have our eye on this weekend is the iHeartRadio Music Festival. Kicked off last night. You heard it live on your local iHeartRadio affiliates, some of them, or the iHeartRadio app, or you might have seen it on the CW, your local CW affiliate, or CWTV.com. It's basically if you didn't have your eyes closed for the entirety of yesterday afternoon and last night, you probably saw it, even if you didn't know what the heck was going on. So we'll probably throw in a few more updates about that, because we did actually make it official, and the press release was sent out about the new services that are going to be offered through the iHeartRadio app, a dual-level subscription service, so you can get it ad-free. Not that there's a whole lot of ads now. You know, it's like a problem we didn't even really have. The amount of ads that they play on iHeartRadio versus some of these other apps is negligible. You almost don't even notice they're there. But for the few ads that they do have, you can get rid of those. And what I think is more important is the unlimited skips. Have you noticed that? If you're doing your own channel and you can do the thumbs up, thumbs down, and skip forward?
Yes.
Okay.
I'm on now. My mic, we had some mic issues, and it's working now. That's one thing I've liked about the iHeartRadio app is the skips. You're telling me it's unlimited now?
Yeah.
Because in the past, once I've skipped five, I'm done, and it didn't matter which channel I was on. Well, we were done with five skips.
See, this is an interesting little minefield of legalities you go through here with the royalty structures. If you don't choose the song, it's a much cheaper royalty. But if you want to pick a song and have it played on demand, you know how that's another royalty schedule? They do that for the ability to skip. Once you start controlling what you do and don't listen to, you get popped with another royalty. So they used to limit it so you didn't just run up the bill skipping through, listening to 5 seconds of songs going, oh, that's good, oh, that's good, oh, that's good, and you're just cranking the bill up. Well, now if you're going to be paying $5 or $10 a month, doing a lot better. Skip away. You earned your skips. You're paying for your own skips. So more details on that coming up. How was your trip?
It was really good. Flights were awesome both directions. You know, I flew Southwest. I'll do that for the short hops. And on the way to Dallas, that jetliner, you know, it just felt we were shoulder to shoulder in the seats, and we were.
You were.
And however, on the return flight, it was like, I don't know if it's a newer or older, it felt like a newer jet. However, I felt like I had a couple more inches on each side. Of course, it wasn't people who I was sitting with, I knew very well. It was Stacy and Ashley. So, and I was so comfortable, I fell asleep. So, you know, I like that actually on a flight, and it's a very smooth flight, so it doesn't wake you up. It's like time travel. Like, boom, you're there.
Yeah,
so like I when fall you asleep. I woke up to have a drink, and then went right back to sleep. And next thing you know, we're about to land. I was like, God, man, this was a quick trip.
It reminds me, because I do that sometimes. When you were a kid and you would leave Christmas or whatever and you would have to take like an hour ride back home from grandma's house and you would fall asleep in the back seat and they'd wake you up and it was like a 2-minute commute. Anyway, what about the actual content of the trip? Because this is one of those where you're not going to come back with a big binder wherever a bunch of people taught you some new things. You were the guy handing out the info to other people.
We've done this show for over 6 years, and that's what I told the group that I was speaking to is, you know, for years there, I would travel somewhere every month to pick somebody's brain or go to a conference and listen to the speakers. My objective was to learn, find something to take away from that trip. And I always look for, all I need is one good nugget of information makes the trip worth it. And a lot of times I'm getting 10 nuggets or 15 or 20. And sometimes maybe one, but that's all I needed. And to bring that back, enhance our firm, enhance our clients and the guidance and their experience. On this trip, I wasn't there to get a nugget. I was there to give out a lot of nuggets. So basically, a good while back, I was asked to speak at this conference as a trainer, coach, and they said, we're giving you 4 hours. Well, it turned out I needed more. At first, I'm thinking like, wow, that's a lot of time to cover. And then when we got into it, it's like, I need more time.
When you get into it, it's like one Saturday show and one daily wrap, and that's it.
Yeah. When you there was a Q&A yesterday. I was on the panel where there was a Q&A, and that's kind of what also in one of the questions I was asked, I was kind of explaining this. Yeah, when you get into this, there's so much for me to give back. And I said, now I'm not saying this to try to get on your conference again in the future or whatever. I'm good with what I presented, but there is so much to give and never enough time. Well, wasn't in my case, because we actually did cut content on the back end. It didn't have anything to do with the meat and potatoes I wanted to give out. It didn't affect any of that. It just, there was some other details on CRMs and analytics and stuff like that of what we track.
But, I don't know what a CRM is.
It's basically your database for clients.
Okay.
And that's just, you know, one of the things that's real important is when somebody calls in, we can pull them up very quickly and have the details we need to have a conversation with them. When you think about it, that's pretty cool. And that's pretty valuable to us, and we invested a lot of money to make sure we have these capabilities. And more information, the better the service is for the client. And if they've called in before, you quickly know what that was about or anything, or if this is a repetitive call, I can get details on that conversation, who they called in and spoke to. If it was transferred to another person, I can get details, and I know who they spoke to. I know for how long. I know the details of the conversation. And if there was a call back to be done, I know who's supposed to do it. Was it done? So we're tracking about anything and everything we are. And that's, some of that was cut out on some of that, you know, just basically charts showing what we can get. And then if I need reporting or details about something, I can just go ask for it. I don't do that, but I ask, and it's provided for me. And then I get daily reporting, like who was on the phone, what inbound calls, what outbound calls were done. And, you know, there's just some of those details that I spoke about on there. And then we had a couple of videos we were going to play, and compliance said, we're not going to let you show that video.
Oh, come on. Was it the butcher versus the dietitian video?
No.
Okay.
It was other content we had prepared, and I can understand that. Let's see, what was... And then I had a list of questions at the end of my 4 hours. Right before then, I think I had 15 minutes left, and there was about 10 questions that were asked and compiled. We kind of did the primary concerns thing with this group. They all had the sheet, so they took those sheets and picked out 10 questions for me to answer. And there was one, I think it was number 5, regarding our in case preparation and our case design, and then what we provide the clients from that. And I was thinking when I read the question, I don't have enough time for this. And so I basically said, yeah, I'm sorry, but I can't answer this because of compliance, and then moved on to the next one. And then the last one had to do with advisors and the training and such of them. And I had an opinion to give. And I said, well, I've got 4 minutes left, and this answer to this question is going to eat up that 4 minutes. And I did. I was, you know, some thoughts there I was very passionate about in the business, so I addressed it there.
Are they surprised at not necessarily the level of customer service, but all the stuff that you do? Because out of all your employees, you know, you have a couple of associate advisors. There's another financial guy that watches the market. There's an accountant. There's a CFO. But half of your staff is just customer service. They're not even financial professionals.
Oh, yeah, I had discussions about that, and they know how passionate I am about customer service, and I can get bent out of shape if it's not done right. And I gave them an example of an employee that kind of messed it up, and they were 60 days in, and that following Monday they were no longer with us. You know, and part of that, of why to do that, fire somebody for messing it up, it sets an example for the others. Because they won't mess it up.
Taking customer service very seriously.
Very seriously.
All right, I'm James Parker. That's Gregory Ricks across the table. If you have a financial situation and you're not quite sure what to do, you better call Gregory, 504-260-0995. We're going to talk about the Fed staying pat on rates and what that means for your money next. It's Winning It Live with Gregory Ricks on iHeartRadio.
Welcome.
You're on. You
but
sound great.
I can't hear myself in the...
What you do with your headphones?
Set, so. You're listening to Winning at Life, the weekly wrap. I'm Gregory Ricks, your host, along with James Parker. If you have a financial situation you need some help with, be it mutual funds, like... Which are the loaded, which are the unloaded, non-loaded, non-commission, variable annuities, fixed annuities, the difference, REITs, anything you can think of. Could be, how do I get rid of this debt? It's amazing how much debt is out there. Give us a call, 504-260-0995, or email Gregory at GregoryRicks.com. Use the Gregory Ricks and Associates app to message us as well. If you don't have it, just go to your app store and do search of my name, and you'll pull it up. And the website has a number of options, including site chat.
Yeah, and we were just talking on the break there. Mind if I bring this up?
Sure.
Yeah, we were talking about the links that you have to go to, because not only are you the financial advisor, which is a full-time job, you're also a business owner, which is an additional amount of duties that you have to take care of. Then you do the radio program. You do six of them a week. You know, you do one every day at 7 p.m. on the weekdays, and then we do this one here on the weekends for 3 hours. But it's not just the time that we're on the air. You have to prepare for it, so at least an hour a day minimum, and then on the weekends throw in another couple of hours. And I ran across a survey, a study on Wednesday that looked at the leisure time between the different stratuses of society. And the people at the top, the 1%, the top 10%, the top 20%, they all have less leisure time than any other category in the bottom 80%. And the people that actually have the most leisure time, we don't count retirees and we don't count, you know, disabled people. But out of the working Americans, the ones that have the most free time is what we would call the blue collar worker. He has the most free time. And if you think about that, yeah, you know, when you go out and you go to the lake and you see guys doofusing around on their boat, you know, a lot of times it's the blue collar guys. When you see the guys that go hunting and fishing, Those are the blue-collar guys, the guys that have awesome hobbies where they take an old car from the junkyard and them and their buddies rebuild it in the front yard while it's on blocks drinking Coors Light. They've got free... I don't have time to do that. You have time to do that?
I do not.
And
we're, I wouldn't mind doing a number of those things.
I know. Wouldn't it be great? Wouldn't it be great to have a hobby? Remember having hobbies?
I really enjoy what I do, so it's not an issue like Sorrell Long. God, I wish I could tear down a 49 Chevy and build it back. You know, when you, well, if I get off of work at 5, get, you know, dinner handled, then I've got 3 or 4 hours in the evening every day to do that. I don't.
Mm-hmm.
Don't have it on the weekends either. But that's not what I sit around thinking about. I'm probably, when it comes 1 o'clock, I kind of stop the business thinking. For the most part, it's still there. It probably does come up, but I try to stay away from, get that day and a half break and get rested, re-energized for the week. But, you know, I'm putting in all kind of hours and, yeah, I have less free time than I've ever had. Not when I was young, none now. But we have a purpose and a cause here.
Yeah, and it kind of stinks because the one day a week off that you and I both have, Sunday, you probably have to do the same thing I do. Cram all the other stuff that you're supposed to be doing during the week in that little one day. So if you got to go to Home Depot, or if you got to mow the lawn, or if you got to fix a window, you know, do the, your just sort of domestic life duties. You know, change your oil or run errands. That's my Sunday. Half my Sunday is already blown too.
Yeah, there's a number of things. There's a few things I'm gonna go do this afternoon. Run some errands tomorrow. I do not put in 3 hours into Sunday football of any team. You know, that's just. I can tell you what. Go back a couple of decades ago, I probably watched too much football, but I had time. And it's not something I miss, just like Saints game last week. What did I catch of it? Last 10 minutes. Kind of all I needed. LSU, I'll put more time into that game tonight. But you give up other things that, and I think what we do is a lot more important to that. And that's, yeah, okay. Yeah, I can be a big fan if I have leisure time. But I want to put my time towards things more important.
Yeah, and the good point is, in 10 years, is it going to be more important that this radio show is as successful as possible? Are you familiar with what happened in the third quarter of the Tampa Bay Saints game?
It's not going to matter. It's what we can do to help that client fix that situation. It's the difference. And I have to give credit a lot to my wife, Stacy, that she makes it where I can stay this busy. And my staff pick up a lot of things that allow me to focus on what I do. And, you know, even one of the details, I don't have to worry about lunch. I have a couple of team members that's kind of their thing is to make sure I have lunch. And that started happening years ago because what would happen, I would never eat lunch. I would just work through. So that was fixed. So I have a couple people that just make sure that happens.
Yeah. Hey, look, I've got one of those jobs. People assume it's fun. They're like, I'd like to have your job. Would you? Would you like to wake up every day at 3:30 and get off work at 8:30 p.m.? Is that what you want to do? But we do kind of have fun jobs.
Yeah. I think, in finishing up with the talk yesterday, I said it's special what we get to do. We're blessed, but it's not easy in what we do either. It may look that way, and I have people that tell me, oh yeah, everything you do and touch turns to gold. It may appear that way, but it's taken a lot to get so it looks that way. Had a gentleman before I left the hotel in Dallas that I spoke to, and I've known him for several years, and Stacy told me something else he had told her. But, you know, he just appreciated what I gave to the group and helped him and such. And he thinks a lot of me and how hard we work. But she said he does a 1 hour radio show each week. It's pre-recorded and scripted. And he said when he finishes that taping session, he's completely stressed and exhausted. He said, I have no idea how you do 8 hours of live.
Every week.
Yeah, every week. And to me, it doesn't stress me. I think of it as pretty easy, but it's something I can do. When we had that 30-minute TV show, you remember how it stressed me.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, that's why we don't do it anymore. So I could relate to him on that because that just a 30-minute weekly TV show wore me out and stressed me, so it had to go.
Janet Yellen has a pretty easy job. Compared to us, she has an amazingly easy job. What does she do the other 23 hours a day when she's not giving one of these speeches? Like, does she do anything?
Yeah, or that time in between. They get together, look at some reports, figure out how they're going to word this.
Is that a 40-hour-a-week job? It seems like they just kind of pop their heads up like a couple of days every 2 months, and they do some work.
And they've adjusted rates up once in the past 7 years.
I think we're up to 8 years almost.
Yeah, over 7 years and have adjusted up once. And then we're getting 4 quarter-point hikes for 2016. And then they give us all the reasons things are doing well and then give us the 2 reasons they're not raising rates. They're a bunch of glass half full. Or no, it's not half full. It's half empty there because they really don't emphasize the positive. And when you think of we're going to have an economy that's going to a GDP that's going to come in at 1.4% after a 0.8 and a 1.1, and that means these last 2 quarters have to do better for us to come in at a projected 1.4. So we could end up at 1 for the year. Really, when you think about it, could be worse for the year if these are slower. If we have a 0.7 and say a 0.1, we're lower than they expected and lower where we're paced to. So that really, I think, makes them look bad when they had much better quarters in past years to do that, even during quantitative easing.
Would have been perfect.
They probably should have been raising rates. And based on that Jackson Hole conference they gave in the research they were basing it off, and that's basically what the research said. They shouldn't have cut rates as far as they did and should have been moving up because $4.5 trillion is equivalent to a negative 9% interest rate.
So what does she have to do to get fired? Like in hindsight,
her term's got to end.
Exactly.
And the president says, I'm not keeping you on.
That's my point. There is no accountability. She can just not raise rates. She could raise rates. She doesn't have to worry about losing her job.
And their whole thing is no accountability. You know, she speaks before congressional committees, but there's nothing they can do to her or whatever. And they can, hey, can we see your books? She's going to say, that's not something you can do.
How nice, huh? This is Tears for Fears. Aren't they at the iHeartRadio Music Festival tonight? Fantastic. Check it out on your local iHeartRadio affiliate, the iHeartRadio app, or it's playing on the CW as well. If you have a financial situation, not quite sure what to do, you better call Gregory, 504-260-0995. Coming up next, we're going to hear from Janet Yellen and break down her statements from Wednesday. I'm James Parker. This is Winning It Live with Gregory Ricks on iHeartRadio. Baby, you're a song. You made me want to roll my windows down and cry.
Baby, this is Winning at Life, the weekly wrap. It's Georgia Florida line. Did they play last night?
You said it backwards. It's Florida Georgia.
Georgia.
I mean, it's the same state boundary, but it's a different band. They're playing tonight.
I love their music, most of it. There's always some of anybody, I didn't like that song.
This is one of those bands, people dog on them so much you're almost afraid to admit that you kind of like the song. And then I saw him at Bayou Country Superfest 2 years ago. And I was like, oh my God, I know 8 of their songs. I could only name maybe 4. But it turns like there's a couple other songs they do that I didn't know was them. They'll sneak up on you, these guys. Like, yeah. This show will sneak up on you.
Yeah, I've seen them perform before. I think it was the American Music Awards a few years ago. What was that? They had one of the most downloaded songs ever. One of their early hits.
It wasn't Cruise? Might have been Cruise?
Yeah.
Something else?
Don't recall, but good stuff.
All right, let's get
on
back
to business.
Yeah, let's get back to business here. So we were talking about Janet Yellen and the Fed's decision to not raise rates. Just a cursory, quick lightning round opinion here. Gregory, I think they did the wrong thing. You agree?
On this one, yes.
Okay.
We need higher rate for when we go into a recession that is inevitable.
Well, I'm not even worried about the rates for the recession, because you're saying what? So we can go back and have something to cut to kind of spur aggregate demand, like
no,
they say?
No, but here, I don't know what they're thinking, but I can tell you part of the problem with the GDP is consumer spending in the economy. And what do I deal with most of the time? Yeah, my CDs are coming up for renewal. I was getting 3.5 or 4, just throw a number out there, and they're renewing at 1. Or my income has declined for the past 5 years because rates. And what are we speaking? We're speaking about conservative people that don't want to be exposed.
Financially conservative people.
Yeah, they don't want to be exposed to. Yeah, and this.
Gotta be careful.
Gotta be clear. That we're speaking of conservative savers and investors. And if their income's going down, they're spending less, which everything else shows is slowing. And if we had better on the other side, then we have a better GDP, better economy. Maybe you can stave off the recession even longer, but that's always kind of a reset. But that is part of the problem. And you know what? It's a domino effect to everything.
It's a no-yield world. You're forcing people into risk. So you're artificially inflating the stock market, creating bubbles.
And that's going to be a big bubble, and it's going to be ugly when it pops.
All right. So with that context, let's get into the first Janet Yellen clip. And it, you know what, Gregory, I map these things out, and when I look at these two clips, it doesn't matter what order we play them in. Do the second one first. Let's do them in reverse order. It doesn't matter. She's just it's just hot air. It's just go ahead.
We continue to expect that the evolution of the economy will warrant only gradual increases in the federal funds rate over time to achieve and maintain our objectives. That's based on our view that the neutral nominal federal funds rate, that is the interest rate that is neither expansionary nor contractionary, and keeps the economy operating on an even keel, is currently quite low by historical standards. With the federal funds rate modestly below the neutral rate, the current stance of monetary policy should be viewed as modestly accommodative, which is appropriate to foster further progress toward our objectives.
I don't buy that. I don't buy that there's this magical neutral rate that you could be at that's neither inflationary nor expansion, or would you say expansionary or contractionary? And if you are under that, then why? Why don't you go up to where that neutral rate is? Because she thinks it's expansionary. It's not at this point. You can't say this ultra-low interest rate environment's expansionary when we have GDP growth at a snail's pace. That's my reaction.
Want me to put that in English?
Go ahead.
We have things going pretty well. Some areas, things are going really good. Then we have other areas that are showing slack or slowing, and the GDP is a concern for us. We need to hike rates. We intend to in the future, ongoing. But to just be straight up honest with you, we are worried that if we add a quarter point, it could push us into a recession. We don't want anything negative to happen, but we do continue to expect things to improve, inflation to go up, get to our nominal rate, and the economy to increase in the long term.
See, I don't like that. I don't think higher inflation is a good thing.
But that's what my take on what they just said. And the key point in there is a quarter point hike. This economy and everything's teetering on the edge. It's kind of like you're at, you know, you're on the Grand Canyon, you're standing at the edge, and you get a nudge over. That's what they're worried about the quarter point doing. And I just said it in a way that I think most could understand instead of what she said. But I added in there that little bit of concern is that pushing it over the edge. They're so afraid, knowing we need to hike the rate, but we're also afraid to. We need to take the training wheels off, but you know the bike could fall over when we're riding.
Okay, but isn't that sort of she's implying that she knows that stocks are a bubble right now? Because, you know, the ratios of what they cost versus what they're bringing in.
They know what, they clearly know what they've done. They know it's going to come down when they do it. But the other thing is we're 0.08 and 1.1, respectively, first two quarters on GDP. And we're expected now to grow only 1.2%. So we're probably going to finish up the year at 1.4. That's way below. What are we closer to based on the first two quarters? We're closer to going negative than we are higher. And this is the slowest in years. That's where their ultimate worry is they don't want to be the cause of the recession, which then that's going to start popping bubbles as well.
All right, next clip, Janet Yellen from Wednesday's press conference after the Fed announced they're not raising rates.
The recent pickup in economic growth and continued progress in the labor market have strengthened the case for an increase in the federal funds rate. Moreover, the committee judges the risk to the outlook to be roughly balanced. So why didn't we raise the federal funds rate at today's meeting? Our decision does not reflect a lack of confidence in the economy. Conditions in the labor market are strengthening, and we expect that to continue. And while inflation remains low, we expect it to rise to our 2% objective over time. But with labor market slack being taken up at a somewhat slower pace than in previous years,
scope
for some further improvement in the labor market remaining, and inflation continuing to run below our 2% target, we chose to wait for further evidence of continued progress toward our objectives. This cautious approach to paring back monetary policy support is all the more appropriate given that short-term interest rates are still near zero, which means that we can more effectively respond to surprisingly strong inflation pressures in the future by raising rates than to a weakening labor market and falling inflation by cutting rates.
There she is with the slack.
But you heard, it's right there at the end. They said cutting rates isn't going to work in the future. You're not going to respond. But on the other end, raising the rates when needed, they can respond too. But lowering's not going to help anything in the future when it happens or it's needed. That's not the fix. But we have no problem raising them when we need to. Based on that, if that holds the course, I don't know that we get a rate hike in December. And my take on her talk is what I said earlier, is all these things are working good. There's reasons we didn't. And then I threw in there what that means. And, you know, the things are teetering. We don't want this to go the wrong way. We can always raise rates.
Where's all the Janet Yellen critics? Because that's not what she said last year. She said it would have been raised by now. She promised all kinds of hikes.
Has she ever explained why they're not raising? I thought that was, you know, there's two reasons why we didn't. Did they ever answer it quite like that? I don't recall.
504-260-0995. This is Winning It Live with Gregory Ricks. I'm James Parker on iHeartRadio. Be right back.
Welcome back to Winning at Life, the weekly wrap. I'm your host, Gregory Ricks, 401k Retirement Authority. James Parker is in studio with me. We have Dwayne Stein coming up in the next hour. He's actually the host of Mortgage Gumbo, the live show that follows ours. He's a member of the Total Wealth Authority, so we look forward to hearing him in the next hour. If you have a financial situation you'd like help with, mutual funds, you know, what about that life insurance? You know, we've been, that's something I need to talk about a little bit more. We've been having a lot of questions come in about that from meetings that we do during the week. Your 401k is a popular subject with people calling in. Social Security phone number is 504-260-0995. Gregory at GregoryRicks.com by email, text through the Gregory Ricks app. And the website, there is a site chat that will get the question over to us pretty quickly as well from one of the team members that monitors that. On finishing up, I want to touch on a subject. Stacy and I had a little extensive conversation about it. It's not financial, but I just want to put it out there in my take, and it regards police and the military. Just really got to thinking about it yesterday afternoon after... And I've been a little bit disconnected at times this week, and sometimes by regular news, I'm disconnected. And because I'm always really tied into the financial world. But I've developed a take on this that I just want to throw out there. And there's, you know, been another shooting where a police has killed another individual. There was one, and then an officer was charged with manslaughter last week in Oklahoma. And one of the things that started crossing my mind, and I heard this video that the wife had put out yesterday, and but this had already ran through my mind, if I'm pulled over, and for some reason the officer or officers thinks I have a weapon, and they start telling me to put the weapon down, my thought is, it's over for me. I don't have a weapon, but they think I have a weapon. And you know what it looks like? All you have to do is be holding a weapon, and they shoot you. That's what I think. Now, would I want to be in that situation? Absolutely not. But I go back to this movie, Black Hawk Down, about the Mogadishu raid that went bad. We lost a lot of soldiers that day. But I remember this, you know, there, and this isn't the only time, but for the military to engage in combat, meaning fire on an enemy, what has to happen? The enemy has to start shooting. And that was on that raid. They said, you know, they asked the sergeant, can we shoot yet? He says, are they shooting at you? And the next thing, bullets whiz by. Yeah, they're shooting. Well, shoot back. I think something has to change. I think a lot of what we've seen in the past, and video has changed this, and police are carrying monitors and such now, so everybody can see everything. And I believe we're seeing more of what was done wrong in the past, and I think they're too quick to shoot, and to shoot for the wrong reason. Just because they have a gun in their hand does not give an officer a right to shoot and kill somebody. Now, if they have that gun and they're pointing it at the officer, then you really have a tough decision to make. It gets closer to that. But if they just have, you know, say I do have a gun in my hand and it's held in my hand pointing at the ground, you do not have the right to shoot me or anybody else. I know it's tough what they do, but that is what they do. If they're not being fired at, you know, it could come to a day, if you're not taking fire, you can't shoot anybody. Will we lose some officers? Yeah. But I tell you what, we're losing a lot more officers how it is now because they've just become targets because they seem a bit trigger happy. And I just don't. Somebody's holding a weapon and it's not pointing at anybody is not a right to shoot them and kill them. You know, if you got to shoot them in the leg to get them to put it down. But you can't go killing people over that. And that's where it's tough. But and I don't know where we get the directive from to do that. But we can't shoot the enemy. They're all holding guns, but we can't shoot them. So how in the heck do we get to a point where we can, our people that protect us can shoot us because we have a weapon? And we have a lot of people carrying weapons. And I understand they're afraid of their job. They don't want to die. And we don't want to die either. And I think somewhere this has to change and has to stop. They should be looking for, how can I avoid shooting this person? Wait till they're shooting at you or they've actually pointed it at you. Then we're going to stop it. But if there's not a weapon pointed, okay, he was reaching for it. Okay. He has not gotten a hold of it in his hand or pointed it at you.
But what about the people who say he's not complying? If a cop has their gun drawn on you, or if a cop's telling you to do something, you got to do it.
I understand, but he's not pointed the weapon. You cannot shoot him.
Right, but none of these people have gotten shot that are complying with cops.
Right, but we're talking about the ones aren't complying, but they've not pointed a weapon. You know, oh, he was reaching for it, but there wasn't a weapon there. So how do you... You assumed he's reaching for a weapon, but you didn't see it. I understand it draws that time for you to react slower. But when we get it wrong, it's a big dadgum problem that we need to stop from happening. We're talking, you know, compare it. It's much easier for the enemy to fire on us with the military, because when does the military respond? After the bullets have started flying. Okay, we're not necessarily asking for this here, but you're going to have to get more, you're going to have to get closer to a deadly situation than what we're doing.
You know, I feel a lot of sympathy toward that. My pushback against it, though, is that this is a human enterprise. People are going to make mistakes. We all understand that. What's the percentage, though, of the mistakes that we would allow? You know, because there's a little bit of slack in any enterprise. You don't get upset when Drew Brees doesn't have 100% completion percentage.
You just need to end the subject there if you're going to bring football as a comparison.
No, I'm just saying.
No, listen
to
me.
Cops are going to make mistakes. How much do we tolerate?
We don't tolerate any mistakes from the police. Military shoots the wrong people or shoots civilians. How much tolerance we give? We got soldiers in jail.
And that lady,
you know,
in Tulsa.
The sniper, you know, even in that movie, he says, you know, if you shoot him and you're wrong, you're going to jail. Okay? The police need to understand this. You shoot him and you're wrong, you're going to jail. You don't want to go to jail. I don't want to go to jail, but I don't want to be dead. And I don't want you killing somebody that we could have found a way out of this. So how many cops have we had die because they waited and they were killed by trying to get close to that point? I don't recall of any in this year that were shot and killed because they were in a situation and they went. Have we had some? We've had a lot killed because people have targeted them as all this has erupted because they've killed people. and it can't be justified. There is no other comparison. The comparison closest I can get is how the military does it, because that's when shooting happens. You can't compare sports. There's nothing else you can compare it to, except we're going to have to run that tighter. And I think we stop the wasteful killing of everybody, and we don't need officers killed because somebody's hateful or mad. But on the other end, we don't need them killing our own. You're here to serve and protect and not kill. We have to find a way to stop that. And I think we have to tighten up on what's a justifiable shooting. And your body camera you're wearing better show a gun pointing at you, or you're going to jail for shooting them. We need a higher standard. And I think it is coming to this. I may be the first to say it, but it is coming to this, that this standard has to get higher. We cannot have questions or doubt, and the error rate needs to be minuscule. That's it.
All right. Coming up next, Dwayne Stein is going to join us for the next hour, and then he's got to get back to the lab because he's coming up with a whole hour of mortgage gumbo at 1 o'clock. But we're going to talk to him about the 10 commandments to get a home loan, and then we're going to bounce off the Janet Yellen decision off of the great Dwayne Stein, because this has profound impact on the mortgage industry, definitely those rates. If you have a financial situation, you're not quite sure what to do, you better give us a call, 504-260-0995. I'm James Parker. This is Winning It Life with Gregory Ricks on iHeartRadio.
Hour two of Winning It Life with Gregory Ricks. This is the weekly wrap, 401k and Retirement Authority. This is the place where you get your financial fix for a better tomorrow.
I'm your co-host, James Parker. Still coming up on the show, we have to talk about, for the women, in the 12 o'clock hour, how do you handle your financial planning through a divorce? We're also going to answer the question, you've been plowing money in your 401k all these years, now what? I think we had three of those questions this week call into the show, Gregory. If you have a financial situation, you're not quite sure what to do, you better call Gregory, 504-260-0995, or you can send us a text message via the Gregory Ricks and Associates app. Joining us this hour is the great Dwayne Stein of Mortgage Gumbo. Hey, Dwayne, good to see you again.
Same.
Did you hear the two little sound bites that we had from Janet Yellen's Wednesday press conference?
Yeah, I heard y'all talking about it. I was actually, that's when I was getting out the car coming up, so I did not get to hear the full thing, audio. No, I did not.
Yeah, I mean, we could just play a 30-second
please do
loop.
Yes.
No, of Charlie Brown's teacher, and well, it would be about as useful.
Well, and that's what I was going to say. I mean, is it pretty much the teacher at the just a womp 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 womp?
Yes, I mean, yes, or the AK-AX and Mars Attacks. Yeah, 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 yeah.
Right.
And so what we're learning here is that it doesn't matter what they said yesterday or last week or 2 weeks ago or a month ago. They reserve the right to change their metrics and move the goalpost at any time for any reason, and they don't even necessarily have to explain it well on why they did it.
Well, what I found amazing is when y'all were talking about in earlier discussing, you know, what does she even do? And, you know, I talked about on a couple of my mortgage gumbo shows probably a couple months back, was just she could really just chill out till 2017, because we knew as much as they were trying to make us believe that maybe here in September they were going to do something. When it all came down to it, they weren't going to. There was no way ahead of the election the Fed was just going to turn over and hand over the election to Trump. We knew that, you know. So the only thing, I guess, what I would ask y'all is there light at the end of the tunnel, Gregory, with this, now that we saw 3 of the 10 people did vote to go? That's a first. I mean, we've kind of broken through where it wasn't unanimous. So now 3 people said, let's raise rates.
Probably could see that again in December, but I'm not – my confidence in a rate increase for December, where everybody says, oh, it's December. Well, based upon what she said, and I know it can change at any time,
right,
but knowing what I basically pulled out, and what she's meaning there is, yeah, we don't want to pop bubbles and start the decline towards the recession by raising a quarter point. So I don't know how they ever get there, but just for that reason, the two reasons she gave for, which was pretty interesting that she actually defined and point, here's why we didn't.
Right.
But she had already given four or five reasons why they could. So they can, like James said, they can justify anything anyway. And they said, well, you didn't make a touchdown. Yeah, we did, because right before we ran that play, we moved the touchdown goal line closer to the ball.
Right.
So it's they change, and they're going to make it come out however they want it to, but they're really afraid to pop bubbles and start the recession.
Okay, so Dwayne, when we watch these rate hikes, we watch it because its effect, it kind of trickles out to bonds and then to fixed interest products, and you know, it kind of goes into the financial world like that. You look at the exact same data, but it filters down into your industry a little bit different. How does this rate hike or non-rate hike affect what you're going to do tomorrow and the next day at cross country?
Here's what I could tell you what I did, and this is the beauty of Gregory Ricks, and I can't bow down to him enough, like the old princes, you know, in history of the world. Remember when they would fan Mel Brooks and all that kind of stuff?
With the palm fronds. Is that how you bought the palm fronds?
Yeah, that's what I'm doing to Gregory right now. So, but what you've got to look at is what I did, learning to plan ahead. What I did this week before is I floated the rates on every one of my customers, which what floating the rate means is I made sure that the rate could not go any higher. I floated everything to where it was set up through Thursday morning, okay? Because this way, depending on what was going to happen with interest rates, I knew any of my clients that I was working with could not be in a worse situation. And when I say worse, keep in mind, we're still at super lows, okay? But I made sure that the rate we had initially talked about, that if by some chance she did raise them and everything went haywire, I could have my clients at a comfortable rate that they were already expecting to get. Well, the reason I had them expiring Thursday was, lo and behold, when she did not raise the rates on Wednesday, guess what we've seen the last 2 days? Rates have just, and you could see it, I watched the 10-year bonds probably like you guys do, because that's where all my rate data comes from, okay? So I watched in 10-year bonds. I woke up Thursday morning, and Yahtzee, there it is. They're going down, and everything's happening with the 10-year bonds. So lo and behold, guess what? I probably locked, well, not probably, it was 15 clients for over $3 million that we were able to get either a 1/8 to 1/4% lower in interest rate on what we originally discussed. So it's really, for me, it meant a big deal as far as clients. But at the same time, what are we talking about here? My clients that were getting 3.875 and now maybe are getting 3.75, the difference in their payments, $12. But at the same time, guess what? New bills in August were down prior to the previous 2 months. So at some point, I got to kind of go with Gregory here. While I love these all-time low interest rates, I mean, we're just circling the drain here. We really, really are.
Well, what's the drain look like? What's the end of this if we don't get some rate hikes?
Well, I mean, I think what you're going to look at is you can't keep the builds right now. The values just can't continue to just go up. They're just not going to be able to, because, again, home buying, if we were seeing peak levels in home purchasing, then you could go, wow, look at us now. This is crazy. This is awesome. But you're not seeing that. What you're seeing right now is the people that are in houses are paying their bills. Okay. We talked about last week how all of a sudden you've got, the foreclosure rates and the default rates are fantastic right now. So you go, wow, that's great. But what does that really mean? Are we as lenders, okay, or investors, you know, are we being a little too strict on some of our lending guidelines? So as I played devil's advocate last week is, hey, let's open some things up. Excuse me. And you know what? They are about to do that. They are looking at some programs where they can get a little bit more lenient. What does that do for the future? I don't know. Does that bring in credit defaults? Are all of a sudden we giving loans to people who don't deserve them again? The pain, I think, is a couple years down the road. But if we don't do something soon, it's all but for sure we're heading on a broken track, so to speak.
I don't think you mentioned the rates, but you did talk about the 10-year treasury. It showed flat, but obviously it was down the day before. We'll probably see it move down a little bit, but the 30-year fixed, I saw that was down darn.
Yeah, it was down big time. Yes,
yeah. The 15s as well. Yeah, everything moved back down after they didn't hold it. But we had saw stuff moving up in anticipation, pricing it. What if...
Yeah,
they raised the rate.
It was 11. It was 11 straight weeks of the rates teetering, and last week we had finally gotten above, which this is crazy. 3.48% was kind of the benchmark, and they're like, "Hey, all right, here we go. Here it is." Like you said, they were planning on this to improve, and they were trying to set the bar to where, all right, rate hikes are going up, and lo and behold, she doesn't do this, and I mean. 30-year right now is down to 3.42. I mean, that's just – it's a 15-year, 2.78. Greg, you always asking about jumbos. Jumbos are at 3.58% right
what?
Now.
That's a jumbo.
I mean, that's a jumbo loan. I mean, it's crazy.
Dwayne, we talked about this a year ago. I said when rates went under what I had, because I have a 3.875.
Mm-hmm.
I said, man, it's got down to 3.8. At what point do I refinance? And you're like, that's not going to make that big of a difference. What about now?
Yeah, I mean, right now, if you were to look at refinancing right now on a 30-year, yeah, you're looking at it maybe something of value if you know you're in your retirement home. But even if you're still at 3.875, Parker, I'd leave it alone because you've got that FHA loan where that PMI is about to fall off. We don't want to touch that.
That PMI is not going to fall off. I'm going to take it out in the alley, and I'm going to beat the snot out of it. I'm going to leave it for dead face down in the gutter is what I'm going to do.
Absolutely.
So
Absolutely.
Since we brought that question up that way, when do I refinance? So if somebody's on a 30-year, how much savings do you suggest when they're looking? Okay, it's a half point. Is that enough, or do I need three-quarter or a point? What's your thoughts on a 30?
Yeah, to be honest, Greg, great question. And all the time when I talk to clients, because every single client to me, you know, old school used to be, Gregory, if you remember, it was, hey, if I can't at least lower my rate a point,
yep.
then would the, you know, then it's not worth it. So, you know, the first question I ask everybody is, number one is, what are you doing this for? Are you refinancing because you want cash out, because you want to do an addition, because you want to put a kid in college? Is a lot different than if you – so the first thing I ask right now is, if this is your retirement home, then let's do this. 90% of the loans I'm doing right now, Gregory, on refinances or taking people from 30 to 15 because people are just taking full advantage of, you know what, you want to keep – values increasing, I'm going to sit right here in my home. They're not going to sell their home, and that's why we see – 51-year lows on home ownership right now, or since 1951, 60-year lows. That's why you're not seeing it, because it's too easy for me to just keep getting – the house is kind of like a bank right now. I could refinance, get the money I want out of my house, stay put right here, get interest rates at – I mean, I'm basically robbing a bank without a gun. I could sit here, do what I need to do on this house, make it my retirement home. So they're dropping from 13 to 15 years. Maybe their payment's going up $100 because the rates are so much lower than what they were at. And everybody goes, oh, well, people's rates are all already low. This week alone, five clients this week all had interest rates of over 5%. So when I'm taking them from 5% to a 15-year where we're looking at 3%, 2.875, I'm cutting their rate in half. We're saving them. We're cutting it down to a 15 years and still saving them money.
So you're lowering their monthly payment and chopping off 5 years.
Absolutely. Yeah. At least some of them it's 20, some of them it's 10 years. They might be 5 years in. So it's tremendous. And really taking that FHA loan where they have some PMI, putting them on a conventional loan where we get rid of that PMI, that's automatic savings right there.
All right, there's Dwayne Stein, host of Mortgage Gumbo. He is our guest this hour. So if you have a financial or mortgage-related question, you better give us a call, 504-260-0995. And when we come back, David and Metairie on hold. You're going to be first up. I'm James Parker. This is Winning It Live with Gregory Ricks on iHeartRadio. Welcome to Winning at Life with Gregory Ricks on iHeartRadio. I'm your co-host, James Parker. This little angel in the background is Britney Spears, who is not hot, but she's hot again. She was totally hot, and then she left the world of hot, and then she got it back together, and she has crossed the boundary back into hotness, and she's one of the big stars at our iHeartRadio Music Festival.
So she got a second chance.
She earned a second chance. Okay. She had that tummy didn't flatten itself out after two kids. So someone did some work there. Yeah, Dwayne Stein finally chimes in on that, huh? Dwayne Stein's in studio with us. He's the host of Mortgage Gumbo. And fantastic festival. I wish to God I could be there. When I went, it was awesome. When Gregory's gone, it's totally awesome. But you don't have to miss it. I know in the New Orleans area, it's on Voodoo 104. For our listeners on the Biloxi affiliate, we playing it over there in that cluster? Because if not, you can still hear it on your iHeartRadio app, or you can go to your local CW affiliate, or you can go to CWTV.com. We're getting it for you. You can watch this thing.
If you want. Well, Gregory's always... Why is he not there now? Well, I had a conference to speak at in Dallas, so it conflicted travel and planning, so one of my advisors, Nicholas, got that opportunity. I had tickets and everything to go, but I couldn't work it out because I had to speak to 400 advisors on Thursday and Friday. So,
and none of them looked as good as Britney Spears, did they? That's a no, Gregory. You don't even have to think about that.
That's a loaded question, boss.
This is a tough thing to have passed up and missed.
All right. Hey, if you have a financial or mortgage-related question, not quite sure what to do, you better call Gregory and sort of Dwayne, too. David and Metter, you're next up on Winning It Live with Gregory Ricks. How can we help you, sir?
Hi. About PMI, in my experience with trying to get that off of your mortgage is not the simplest matter in the world at all, because you're not going to have an appraisal available to you at some discounted price as per closing a mortgage. You're going to have to go out there and pay retail price for a full-size appraisal, write a letter, document all of this, send it to a company like Chase, who's going to sit there and find every excuse to tell you why, no, you're at 81% and you're not at 79%.
Oh, is that how this works, Dwayne? I haven't been through this process yet. Works.
You're not going to get that taken off without an appraisal, especially when you're on the line.
Well, I David sounds pretty fired up, and obviously he has Chase, and he's having some run-ins and some issues there. So here's what I could tell you. When we're getting PMI removed, as far as when we're doing it for refinance purposes, a lot of times what we look at is we'll work out that there is a full appraisal that needs to be done. But with that being said, for $325 or $400, it's usually the clients jump all over it because they pay a lot more than that in the PMI. So it just depends. Now, if you're trying to do it internally, when your lender tells you, hey, listen, we'll drop it off at 78% or 80%, the experiences I've had have not been as bad as what it sounds like David's having here. So I don't know if they're requesting multiples or if they're just trying to use a AVM, which is just really without doing an appraisal. It's just a asset value management system.
But Dwayne, is there a uniform process or does it change from company to company?
Yeah, pretty much.
They didn't want to do active value management. They wanted a full priced appraisal, and which meant that since you're not closing a mortgage, you're going to go out there and hire somebody who's going to make you wait and pay full price for it.
Well, and who is this through? Chase?
Chase.
Okay. So
yeah, I don't know.
You got to go pay retail. What Stein keeps bringing up is paying it when you're closing a mortgage, and that's not paying retail price.
What, for an appraisal? Sure it
is. $300, simple, quick, and easy. I would have already done it. I didn't get prices like that on my own. I'm an idiot, but I didn't get $300 appraisal prices in the open retail market.
It just depends. A lot of companies out there, if that's all it's for, what you got to find out from Chase is your appraiser on their list? That's the name of the game. If you're just calling random Joe Blow, it's probably not worth it to them because they've got to go through certain companies and stuff like that. So you've got to find out on that, David, man.
Maybe my experience was this was at the height of the refi, even though you're doing quite a bit now, I know that. But when the heavy refi started coming in, when the first initial interest rate reductions were going down, I guess this is when I was looking for this, and I was I couldn't even get people to call me back.
Right.
So I know
right.
I wasn't going to get it for $300.
Well, yeah, that mean no, you're on to something there. But here's what I could tell you, man. Chase should be, and these lenders, for the most part, they're usually these problems, I could tell you, or lack of. This is sort of a first. I'm with you. Obviously, you're pretty passionate about it, so no doubt you're dealing with it one-on-one and eye-to-eye. But I would tell you, it should not be that hard of a process. I mean, they do modifications all the time for people who are past due or who are not. So my experience has always been that they're pretty lenient for the folks who are actually like yourself, David, who I assume is paying the bill on time and really just wants to look at getting rid of that that private mortgage insurance.
Yeah, well, David, what do you do? Did you just sit here and pay PMI for the last few years?
No, we finally dumped the property, but it was half commercial, what was half residential. And Chase is a bad mortgage servicing company. And when you deal with them, it's really horrible. Example, we were a condo, and we got dismissed from the condo association because they wouldn't pay a common repair bill, and we paid it, and we got our lot, our building, a double, and we had two mortgages because it was two condos. We spent the entire time with Chase after the dissolution from the condo telling them that it was no longer a condo, it was nothing more than a townhouse. And we did nothing but correspond with them for 8 straight years on insurance of they didn't have the master condo policy, blah, blah, blah. It was stupid. It was they are the worst company probably in the entire mortgage industry.
Dwayne, yeah, what were your thoughts on that?
Well, I think when you're dealing with it, listen, Chase is one of our investors. I don't. Here's what I. Well, no, I mean, I don't. Who I sell? Here's the deal. If I call you, David, and I go, hey, Chase is going to give you the rate at 3, Wells Fargo is going to give you at 3.25, what you going to go with?
I'm going to go with Chase, but I tell you, they are horrible human beings.
All right,
they don't care.
I just proved my point. People care about how am I going to get the cheapest rate, and it's my job to provide that. All that other stuff, those are a lot. I mean, it sounds like your situation is a little bit of a one-off, especially if it was residential and commercial. I don't really know, but you know, most people, when it comes down to it, and after I've developed what their needs are, they and we figure it out, they're going to go, all right, well, listen, if they're going to offer the best deal then or the best rate, then let's look at that. But with that being said, man, sorry about that situation. But I can tell you this, I get rid of PMI all the time. And, you know, a lot of times when we're doing the refinances with the title companies that we work with, we'll go back through that, whoever somebody has closed with, we'll offer them a reissue rate. So the title insurance is very, very cheap. The appraisals, a lot of times, if it's a situation where we look at splitting it or we're doing something like that, then we take care of these things all the time. And we get somebody can refinance. We're doing several of them right now where people are refinancing and it's costing them really less than, you know, $1,100, $1,200. And when you're looking at it's going to save them $300 or $400. People are usually pretty quick to get on all over that.
Thank you very much for the call, David.
Yeah,
and
good call, David.
Feel free to call back anytime.
Yep.
Can I comment about Chase and other big bank mortgage firms and such? Your disconnect there is you're a number. And, you are dealing with a giant firm, and you're having an opinion and seeing it one way. And I would probably be totally on his side is, look, you need to work with me a little bit, you know. And what they're doing is somebody's flipping open, okay, if we have this situation, what do we do? It's laid out there. It's instructions. That's all they know. They're not going to do anything else. And there's not a human being that would say, you know, based on this, yeah, get this done for them. It's just numbers, and it's a massive company, and that's all they're going to go by is the numbers.
Yeah.
Boy, and I hear them making mistakes that both of y'all have to deal with. You just heard what David was dealing with in Metairie. You have clients that come in all the time that got a variable annuity that was sold to them from a bank or something of that nature, cleaning up a lot of their messes. What's that like?
Well, we don't go back. We don't call up the bank or whatever. And if it's a Prudential variable annuity, for example, we're calling Prudential Service Center to get the information. And one thing about it, like it or not, that's the information. That's how it's going to work. It's in the contract, and that's what we want. You know, what we always really seek is the truth. Let's get to a bottom line. And if you're not going to change it for me or whatever, just like the individual there that called in regarding that mortgage, well, just tell me the truth, and if you're not going to change it, okay, then fine. Let's get to that and then move on to next and decide what to do next.
Well, it seems preventative because I'm sure Dwayne, because he does this all day, every day, probably explains it better when the mortgage is being originated than, you know, leaving that information untouched and they have to find out the hard way later.
Yeah, no doubt. And but there are one-offs. There are things that slip through the cracks. There's no doubt about it. I mean, listen, I've had people that have had to call me where we're servicing a loan and by some chance, let's say they're escrowing. And that's why I always say, just because the mortgage company handles my escrows, guess what? I still verify that it's been paid when the due date comes because it's human error, or now people are relying on a computer to handle these things. So guess what? If the computer didn't send out my check to the tax assessor's office, I don't want to find out in 6 months that my house was bought at an auction for $200.
Yeah.
So you got to really kind of stay on it. But there are one-offs, and mistakes do happen, and we just got to help. We'll help work through it at Cross Country, that's for sure.
All right, and press and pause on the Dwayne remote. If you have a financial or mortgage situation you're not quite sure what to do, you better give us a call. 504-260-0995. That's Dwayne Stein in studio with us. I'm James Parker, and you're listening to Winning at Life with Gregory Ricks on iHeartRadio.
Welcome back to Winning at Life. This is the weekly wrap. I had to think there for a moment because we do the daily wrap on weeknights at 7. But this is the weekly wrap. We have Dwayne Stein, host of Mortgage Gumbo, in studio with us. If you have a financial situation or a mortgage situation, give us a call, 504-260-0995.
A helpful rule of thumb to help you delineate when we're on the daily wrap and the weekly wrap is if Gregory Ricks is wearing a T-shirt. That's how we can tell. All right. Dwayne loved that one. To the phones we go. Vincent in LaPlace, you're next up on Winning It Live with Gregory Ricks. How can we help you, sir?
Hey, my situation is I heard y'all talking about PMI, and obviously I got a mortgage in 2010. I purchased a $340,000. I put 10% down.
Yep.
And so I assumed I had PMI. And the paper was sold a couple times, and I ended up with City Mortgage.
Okay.
And since then, I've been paying every 2 weeks, and also I did a couple of principal reductions. So now my payoff is around $260.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I called them up, and I said, what's the procedure to release the PMI?
Yeah.
And they told me, you cannot release the PMI on this loan because it's built into the structure of the loan. The only way I can get out of the PMI portion is to refinance.
Which means he got his loan after a certain date, right, Dwayne?
Well, it just depends. No, not necessarily. Let me ask you this. Who was the original lender or investor that you did your home with, Vincent?
It was actually a local mortgage company here in New Orleans, and I don't remember the name. It was a small company, and I don't even think they're in business anymore.
No, so here's what's unique about that situation, Vincent. You probably, this is an old word and not necessarily a bad thing that you dealt with that them, but subprime lending, like in my former life, the loans that I used to make, we didn't charge PMI, and we lent 100%, okay? But if I had to bet, Vincent, your rate was probably a little bit higher than you would like it to have been, correct?
Well, I feel like I had excellent credit, and my income and my LTV, my income ratio, I make a pretty good bit of money, so this was a small house probably for somebody that makes the money I make. The loan was at 4.25%.
Okay,
and,
so that's not bad.
That wasn't bad for that time, I don't think.
No, not at all. Actually, I mean, again, that's not even bad by today's standards. I want to be clear on that. But with that being said, local mortgage companies sometimes, when they do invest, now what happens is you do have local lenders. They'll go in and they'll kind of make these loans, so to speak, and then they'll go to a City Mortgage or something like that where they will buy that paper. So But here's what I could tell you. If somebody's telling you that the PMI and all that was built in, what that means is the 4.25 you got, if you go back and look at your paperwork, I'd be interested to know if they charged you some upfront fees or something like that, some upfront points on top, Vincent. Probably they did, because the rate is pretty good. You know, so you
I was surprised after looking at the paper when I walked away from the closing. I kind of got hit in the back of the head when I realized I paid almost $10,000.
So there you go. Off. So what happened was they charged you there. So here's the thing. So that's exactly what happened there, Vincent. So that's why when they say it's built in. So for you, the good news is this. You don't have any PMI. So if you're not under 80, or if you're already at 82%, or you're down to 78%, and you're trying to figure out, should I redo this thing or not, don't let PMI be a factor, because it sounds like you kind of took the hit up front, so to speak, my man. You know what I mean? So you're okay.
I bought all my PMI all at once in the front. Yeah.
Yes. And listen, I do that all the time. I highly recommend, because one of the things I've learned from Gregory and doing this show is cash is king. So I have learned that if you come to me and you say, I want to put 20% down, the first thing I'm going to do, listeners, and we talk about this all the time on Mortgage Gumbo, the first thing I'm going to do is go, can you afford the payment? Do you qualify if you put down 5% and buy out your PMI? Because on a $100,000 loan, for an example here, I don't want you putting down $20,000. When you could put down $5,000, which is equivalent to 5%, buy out your PMI, and then you save that other, and say it costs $3,000 more to buy out your PMI. People do not understand how cheap PMI is if you buy it up front. And that is one of the things that we do on our loans. We get rid of PMI. I have clients that come in with 3% and have no PMI. If you have a lender that is telling you have to take PMI, tell them what's a good way to put it?
Bogus.
Parker, fib. You're fibbing. You know, that's incorrect. You do not have to have PMI with less than 20% down. It is not mandatory. And now most lenders out there and your banks will tell you that, because they don't want that risk. Because if you put down 20%, they don't have to worry about anything, because they're hedged, because they're already insuring themselves against you that if you do go bad, they get paid back that extra 20% regardless if you go bad on your house or not. That's what the PMI is. So trust me, you do not have to pay that, Vincent. But based on what you've got there, you kind of paid for it up front, man, probably unknowingly, it sounds like, which is a whole nother thing that they didn't let you know up front. But kudos now. At least you're in a situation where you're out of that PMI. You know. But I can tell you this.
So it was a friend of a friend of a friend. So they probably did the right thing by me. You know.
Yeah, they did.
And I didn't even understand it.
Correct. No, and that's fine. But if you want to look at and review that 4.25%, man, if you're looking at something like that, you know, based on credit scores and stuff, you're probably eligible for a little bit more cheaper interest rate right now these days too, bud.
But it's you know, it just looks like it's got to be at least a point and a quarter to justify the closing.
And that's what Gregory asked earlier. No, not necessarily at all. No, it does not have to be. It just depends on what you've got. If you wanted to go down to 15, you know, I've got a client that we're helping right now that we're moving from we're changing their rate by 0.5%, but we're moving them down. They had 24 years left. We're taking them down to 15 years. We're dropping the rate down, so their payments going up by like $75 a month, Vincent, but the total payback, if you're in your retirement home, then you really need to look at it this right now, because rates are so low, but their total payback, I'm saving them $28,000. So why pay $28,000 more for your house than you have to? Now, if I come to you and go, hey, you've been paying on it for 8 years, let's put you back on a 30-year note and look how much money I save, then I'm basically a scam artist, and that's what scammers do. We're not looking to extend you out unless it's my hours are about to get cut. They're talking about maybe I might lose my job or there's something going on. Help me out. I want the lowest possible payment. Then that's a whole different ballgame, man. But it sounds like overall you're in. But don't let anybody tell you the 1% or the 1.25%. I'm not here to tell you what benefits your family any better than what you can, man.
Sound good, Vincent?
Sounds good. Thanks a lot, Brian. Guys. Appreciate
it. Thank you, sir. Appreciate that. If you want to be next, 504-260-0995.
Dwayne, give you a couple follow-up questions on that.
Okay.
Now, a while back, we had heard when PMI gets put on, you're not going to get it off. So is that right or not?
No, it's not. You can definitely get your PMI taken off. Absolutely.
Okay, absolutely. So let's go to the next. Okay, they're telling me I have to have it, and you're saying don't. How is it you can work around it and the others can't?
Because I have investors that will allow me to buy out the PMI up front. Okay, so in other words, most lenders or banks, if you don't have 20%, it's just assumed, and they put you on a program where, all right, there's a payment, there's a certain factor, no matter what it is. Okay, so hey, $200,000 loan, you're putting down 5% because you don't have 20%, and you got to have PMI on there. You do not have to. That's what I want people to understand.
So how are you buying it out?
In other words,
that sounds like a price is paid.
Yeah, sure. There sure is. So in other words, the PMI may cost you over the haul of the loan. The PMI may be $150 a month. Well, what happens is we look at your credit score and your loan amount, and it gives us a factor. And what it does is it gives us a cost. So you're able to look at the cost of that and go, on my $200,000 loan, it's going to cost me with a 689 credit score, it's going to cost me $3,600 to buy the PMI out, as opposed to paying $150 a month. Well, $150 a month times 12 times 10 years, so to speak, is a heck of a lot more than paying the $3,200 up front, and then you don't have to worry about it if you have the money. So if somebody comes to me and says, I've got 10% or I've got 20% I want to put down, then I always recommend let's buy out the PMI.
All right, there he is, Dwayne Stein. We got one more segment left with you, Dwayne, and we're going to cover the 10 commandments to get a home loan. We got to do this at least once a year, Dwayne. If you have a financial situation or mortgage related, give us a call, 504-260-0995. That's Dwayne Stein in studio with us, host of Mortgage Gumbo. Gregory Ricks is across the table. I'm James Parker. This is Winning It Life on iHeartRadio. Welcome back. I'm James Parker on Winning It Live with Gregory Ricks. We're joined in studio by Dwayne Stein, host of Mortgage Gumbo, which is coming up in an hour and 14 minutes, if you want to be real specific about it. Dwayne, give me a preview. What you got coming up?
First off, Gregory, James, thank you. We are celebrating 2 years. It's our two-year anniversary show. Can you believe that?
Is this an anniversary or a birthday? Did we decide?
Birthday, this? I'm sorry. Is birthday.
This, well, this could be like a great taste less filling. It doesn't necessarily have to be settled today.
Yeah, that's true, but let's say Mortgage Gumbo was born on this date 2 years ago. I mean, so I want to call it a birthday. I'm so excited. I really can't thank both of y'all enough. Been so instrumental. And Gregory, thanks. You're the man. You're the one that gave me the moxie to go out and try this. And here we are 2 years later. So
yeah, I remember that key luncheon we had.
Yeah.
You trust me.
Yep, you did.
We will get this going for you.
And
I'm so proud of what you've accomplished, what you bring to the marketplace, and your passion, and it comes out in your show. That's why it's successful.
Yes, sir. Well, hey, just trying to represent the Total Wealth Authority in you, and it's been awesome. And then, you know, Angie, we're growing. We're doing some great things. So it's awesome. So, but today on the show, so we've got that. We'll celebrate that. But we're also going to talk about five ways to boost your credit score, and then four things that you don't know that's affecting your credit report. So we're getting kind of back to the basics here, talking about credit, and really just want to make sure right now with just so many different clients that I've been dealing with, just getting such bad information out there that I wanted to make sure that everybody understands how important credit is. Look, it's right up there with air and water, and I think just based on all the scenarios and the clients that I've been dealing with over the last couple of weeks, I thought it was important to just really touch on just and simplify and educate and show people just the easy things to do to repair your credit and look at. So we're gonna make sure we discuss that. That's for sure. During that hour.
And if we can continue the parade of people who want to call in and punch PMI in the face, you'll accommodate that as well.
Absolutely, I sure will. But talking about PMI, I want your listeners to know as well is with PMI. I'm not on. If you have a more and you're going well. I already have my house, and I want to refinance, but I don't quite have enough equity, so I'm still going to have PMI. Again, that's a farce. Is that right, Parker?
Yes.
I mean, I'm really trying to get educated with you.
Close enough.
I'm trying to catch up. You know, that's a farce. We're refinancing people all the time. We're closing on one Monday, for instance. House came back a little low. Guess what? You can buy your PMI on that as well. You could finance in the PMI into the loan. So, again, they're taking advantage of this interest rate. They were sitting at almost 6%. We're bringing them down to 3.875% on a refinance. The appraisal left them short. They didn't have 80% loan to value. So what we're doing is we're just financing in the PMI. It was only costing this client roughly $1,900 to finance in the PMI. And guess what? We're going to be saving them close to $200 a month. So even if you're listening and you're going, well, I don't have enough equity in my home. I don't, you know, should I refinance? I'm still going to have PMI. That's hogwash. We can refinance you, and we still can get rid of that PMI. Don't believe, Gregory, you say it all the time, this isn't our your grandpa's Oldsmobile, and you do at your event. You always talk about the banks and the savings and loans places. We are not your typical bank out there. We are all about mortgages. That's all we do. So we have programs that will get you in a much better situation over at Cross Country Mortgage.
Yeah, I'm thinking about that video we play at the end of the live event that we all are at and how everybody starts laughing. That conference I was at and spoke to played that video.
Awesome.
And you would not believe the laughing.
Sure.
It doesn't matter where you play it. Yep. It cracks people up, but it makes that point.
Yeah, the video is Stan in South Park going to the bank to deposit a check his grandmother gave him for his birthday, and they lost all his money before he even left the desk.
Yeah.
That is a great one. All right, Dwayne, you got 6 minutes to pump out the Ten Commandments to get a home loan.
Yeah, and I think this is important. So here are the Ten Commandments when applying for a mortgage. Number one, thou shalt not change jobs or quit your job. Please don't do it. Let's close your loan first.
Okay, now quit your job seems obvious, but what if you're changing jobs and you're getting a better one? Would that help you?
Yeah, it does. If you're within 2 weeks, listen, if you can hold off for a couple weeks, it just depends. If not, what normally is going to happen there is we're going to need 30 days of pay stubs from the new place. So you're going to have to start there. Then you've got to wait. Usually it takes about another 45 days because you got your 2 weeks you got to work. So then you get a paycheck. Then you need to get another paycheck. So again, I'm not telling you to stay at that, keep flipping burgers at Wendy's when you got the job of a lifetime over at Apple. Okay. But at the same time, make sure that you understand, get with me first. Okay. So you got to be careful, but quitting your job, you'd be amazed how many people get mad right at that time. And it's just not good. So again, thou shalt not change jobs or quit your job. Okay. Number two, thou shalt not buy a vehicle. Please don't do it. Just wait. Just wait. Take a cab. Do whatever you need to do. Don't buy that vehicle. Okay? It messes up. It affects your debt-to-income ratio. And a lot of times, it could also throw you out of the loan that you qualified for. Because if you're buying a $150,000 house, you have a payment in mind that we got you in on. Sometimes if you go buy that vehicle, it throws your debt-to-income ratio out of line, and all of a sudden, you don't qualify for that home. I've seen it happen. It's not good. Number three, thou shalt keep up with all payments and not charge up credit cards.
That's a tough one, Dwayne.
It really is. But at the time that you're buying a house, most of the time, we work with credit all the time, and we keep people up to date. But now, underwriters and closers, before they close your loan, they will run a check, an inquiry check, a new debt check is what they call it. And they will see everything. So they'll see if, did you get a new payment? Are your credit cards charged up? Where are you at? Did you go get a new credit card? Is that a new payment? Keep in mind, we want to keep you qualified for that mortgage, okay? Number four, thou shalt not spend money set aside for closing. This is really simple. If you need 3.5% on that $100,000 loan to come to closing, that's $3,500. Don't go using that money to buy ICs or go to Florida vacation or something like that.
ICs.
When you know that that's the money that you're going to have to come in with.
That's nice, okay? And random, but it works.
Yeah, I'm looking outside here at Howard Beach, and I'm thinking I might want an IC. All right, number five, thou shalt not leave out debts on your loan application. Again, we run now new debt reports. So just tell us up front where we're at so we can cultivate that loan and we could put together the best loan proposal for you. If you're leaving out something thinking we're not going to find it out, I could promise you we will. And if we don't want to put you in a $175,000 home if you can qualify for $165,000 with that debt in there. We don't want to find out something at the end. All right. Number six, thou shalt not buy furniture. Listen, hold off. You're buying your new home. Wait till you sign that paperwork, then go buy the furniture, then go do whatever you want to do.
Now, that one I bet happens all the time. Some of these are obvious, but this one is obviously in the opposite direction.
99.9% of the new debt alerts that we get the day of closing are Rooms to Go, Kirschman's, all these places because people see, hey, 72 years, no cash, you know, interest only. So they go in there, they get all
72 years, huh?
Yeah. They're going by all their new furniture. You know, you get a new house.
You got to get new furniture. That's part of it. They go together.
And you usually need a new pimp rod to keep in the driveway. You got to impress your neighbors.
It's kind of funny on that. It's just, come buy furniture. Your first payment starts in 5 years.
Right. Exactly. All right, we got three commandments in 2 minutes. Go.
Yep. All right. So thou shalt not let anyone pull your credit. Listen, here's what I'm going to tell you on that, okay? Just be smart on that. Don't go out to the grocery store, the convenience stores, or when you go into the malls or anything like that and apply for that new credit card over at JCPenney. Thou shalt not co-sign for a loan for anyone. Listen, we talk about this all the time. Don't co-sign for anyone. It's not worth it. It can only come back to hurt you. Last two, thou shalt not move any funds in or out of your bank account without consulting your loan officer. Please don't move money, because if that's the money that we're counting, everything has to be tracked. You can't pull it out of your mattress, folks. You just can't do it. And number 10, thou shalt not change bank accounts. We have to have a trail. If you're coming to closing and you're having to use funds, we have to be able to track that. When you change bank accounts, sometimes you have money, you have a waiting period and all that kind of fun stuff. So don't change bank accounts until after you close your loan. So if you want a copy of this, send me an email at info@mortgagegumbo.com, and I'll be more than happy to send this a PDF to you so you'll know the 10 commandments when applying for a home mortgage.
All right, there he is, our guest, Dwayne Stein, host of Mortgage Gumbo. He's got to go get back to his desk and start cranking it out, because he is on the air coming up at 1 o'clock here in the New Orleans affiliate. Our Biloxi listeners, if you want to catch some of that, find us on the iHeartRadio app. Just go over to WRNO, and you can hear his spinoff show that follows ours. Thank you very much for your time there, Dwayne. Now go get back to work. We need some more broadcast excellence in about an hour.
You got it. Thanks.
Thanks. Hey, so Gregory, real quick, just less than a minute here. Never co-sign anything ever? Just buy it yourself? Is that what you should do if you want to help someone out?
It's just tough. You're exposing yourself to somebody else's credit, and that's not something people are going to tell about. Yeah, I miss payments on occasion, or I've got problems in the past. God, that's scary to expose you to somebody else and not ever knowing how they treat their credit.
504-260-0995. If you have any questions, financial planning through a divorce is next. I'm James Parker. This is Winning It Live with Gregory Ricks on iHeartRadio.
Welcome to Winning at Life. This is the weekly wrap. Yes, you'll only have an hour left to get in your question. It's like the door knock. Okay, y'all been in that studio for a while. You don't have much time left. If you have that financial situation you're looking for some help with, this is the place to get that financial fix. I'm your host, Gregory Ricks.
I'm your co-host, James Parker. Coming up in this hour, financial planning through a divorce. We got to talk about some other financial news. But right now, we're going to pick it up exactly where we left off. No cosign ever, no matter what. I mean, there's got to be an exception to the rule here, but it's very slim.
It's a tight, really tiny fine print, and I don't know if I ever want to read it. Look, if you had to find that, I guess maybe it could be your kids. But then I'm going to tell you horror stories of that. And I've got several clients that have done it in the past, had kids to help them buy a home, and they've walked out on the loan. And you co-signed, it's still your loan. So talking about putting parents in a bind, I just don't know that I could do that. I'd rather give them money to get it done. And if that doesn't fix it, then I guess they're not ready for it when you think about that. And if I give them money, and hey, I know some parents where they do the deal, create a contract to get them paid back and get paid back. But there's other cases where, no, I'm not going to get that money back. But for you to keep, you're giving relative money, or say a friend, you count it as gone, even though you've made an agreement. That way you don't have those hard feelings come up. And if you're not going to be able to let it go, then you don't do it.
If you get paid back, it's bonus. If not, it's expected.
Yeah, that's the way you should look at it, but you really should avoid co-signing because you don't, you know, James had mentioned, well, if you have a kid, what did you say about when I told you about that off the air?
Oh, what'd
you describe him as?
First off, your kid's a jerk, and you probably did a horrible job raising him if he's the type of person that would walk out on his own parents from a home loan.
Yeah, I could never imagine doing that. We know it's happened, but that doesn't necessarily mean you've done a job. And I gave James an example. Okay, your son grows up and becomes a crack addict. Where did he get that from? From you at home?
Yeah, that's not a result of my bad parenting.
And you've always talked against it. Right. No, some things just happen no matter what we do. So with that said, let's shift it a little bit. Had a scenario in the past couple weeks that came up where somebody's has assets, they're living off them, and they did give somebody $20,000 to help start a business. And I asked, are you expecting them to pay you back? Yes, they said they would. Did they say when? No, just when the business gets to going good. So you kind of, you don't have a written contract? No. So you kind of have a verbal one. And one reason it's brought up is, I'm telling you, that $20,000 would really help her numbers. And I told her, you absolutely cannot give them any more money or anybody else. You do not have the slack in your financial plan to do that. And this can go wrong. And I see people do it with kids and other situations. And you need to make sure you have the capability, because once you give it, it's probably not coming back. And you need to think of it that way.
And that credit's like a reputation. It takes years and years to build up, but it can all be torn down in just a couple days. Just one dumb act can ruin it all.
Yeah, and look, it could be a young person regarding credit that you've co-signed on the car, for example, and they don't take it seriously, like credit, whatever. I'll send the payment in a couple weeks. I want to buy that stereo system or something. Now, and not until much later, they realize that's one of the most important things you have is your word. And your word is, I will always pay my payments. I will pay you back everything that I owe you. And I will pay it on time no matter what. That's what they're expecting. When you're borrowing money, that's what they expect. That's the agreement. They may not have worded it like that, but they're expecting you to pay it all back on time, never be late. Because you wanted to borrow this money, I'm going to get, in fact, I'm making it available to you now with that promise. And how does society keep up with that? It's called a credit report. That were you as good as your word? That's how I look at it.
Used to be in order to defend your honor. What the heck happened there? Did you hear the static? Used to be to defend your honor, you had to do things like dueling. You know? How dare you sully my good name, sir? My name is worth more than... And yeah, and I'll slap him with a glove, and then we got to go out behind a tree.
Where'd the static come from?
See, it does this to Jerry V every once in a while on the morning show. Should I switch microphones? Oh, no, there it goes. All right, don't move. Don't move your head. I'm just going to sit just in the stoic position.
Keep your arms just like that, and it works.
Yes, all right, Angie. I know your arms are going to get tired, but that's good.
Just, you got to do it.
Hey, remember when you had the old air feed TVs, and you'd have to mess with the rabbit ears when you'd get it just right, and then you'd let go of it, and it would go fuzzy? So guess what, four-year-old James Parker? You're going to have to sit there and hold the antenna until we're done with the football game. All right. So
I remember years ago messing with David that way. There was some gadget I'd put on the TV, and he's sitting there watching it, and I fooled with it, and he'd start to reach up to the box, and then it would start working, and he'd put his hand, and then it'd stop. And then next thing you know, he's sitting there holding his arm up for it to keep working. That's when I let him off the hook. It was pretty funny.
Well, there was that, and I was also the remote control until remote controls were invented, because we would be sitting on the couch, and my dad, you know, I'd sit next to him. I'm 3 years old. He just knocked me off. Go put it on 7, right? I just go over there and click, 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 click. Okay, how do you handle your financial planning through a divorce? We're continuing the Women Winning at Life series. You know, had such a great response from our women-only event, not Wednesday, but last Wednesday. We're just going to keep the ball rolling here. And first thing we get asked is, so what exactly is the wife entitled to when the financial planning is going through their divorce? Can she take half of his 401k? What about the liquid cash? What does this do to Social Security? What does this do child support payments? Is that taxable as income? You know, there's all kinds of questions that come up. And this is another situation, like when we talk about Social Security, they never teach this anywhere.
Well, community property state, you and the wife, your property is all community, meaning you hold 50% interest.
Which means Biloxi people will cover you in a second.
You've acquired everything together, and then the growth from that doesn't include separate property that you've kept separate. It still comes down to a negotiation, but if you're going to fight, it's going to come out 50-50. What's better? Work this out and get close to this when it comes down to it. Look, everything is a negotiation in a divorce, but you've got to work there and get there and not let this drag out. And, you know, so in the past, what have I seen? Divorces go on, you know. Oh, wait, I was witness to fighting over accounts. Neither of them could do anything to the accounts, yet the market was going down, and because they were fighting over it, there was a cease and desist from trades that you couldn't touch any, neither could do, but yet they're losing money. So you're fighting over something that's going down in value there. But this can work out. You could be splitting everything or saying, no, give me the cash account, you keep your 401k. And, you know, it could be the house and anything. Even if you go to a non-community property state, what is it when it comes down to it? It's a negotiation. And everybody feels ownership stake evenly. And is there a possibility of doing other wrangling and positioning? Probably so. It's just really difficult because it really comes down to the law in Louisiana. But no matter what, it's a negotiation. There's give and take.
And does that apply pretty much in whole to our Biloxi area listeners?
Yeah, that's what I was kind of pointing out. When it all comes down to it, it's a negotiation. and somebody's going to think more of something than the other, or think, I put in more effort, I deserve more. But, you know, when it comes down to it, it's joint. Then it gets even complicated or uglier, perhaps some business stake and such as that. But it's always a negotiation and finding a spot that you can live with this and being fair. And people don't always get there.
What if there's not an agreement? What happens to the 401k? Does the court come and blow it up or split it in half, and now you have your own 401k account?
Yeah, this goes 401k. This goes to pension. You know, all this stuff has to be worked out. It could come into the mix, or instead of me getting half of your pension, I'm getting this property over here, or that rental house is going to be mine, or I get the after-tax accounts. And some you should take in consideration. I think it's also, yeah, you've got an attorney involved, and they're helping you get there. But, and I'll put this advice in because I've been through a divorce. And my attorney and I was more about getting it done. The ex and the attorney was more about a fight. And I had already agreed to give more than half to get it done. And I think it took over 2 years to get a property settlement. And you know where we ended up? At my proposal to begin with. They were coming back with outrageous stuff. I said, well, then that means you want to fight, so I'll fight, but you're going to come out worse because it's going to come down to the law. So waited 2 years and still got the same thing. So that's a mindset of judging what's going on here. What kind of position are they taking to, and then make adjustments to solve that.
That sounds miserable. 504-260-0995. We'll continue with this. I'm James Parker. It's Winning It Life with Gregory Ricks on iHeartRadio.
I'm having a record year. Caught a notes and Hank's halftime. I'm pounding on this heart of mine. Song to song, I pass my time. These speakers on 10. Good and gone keeps me up all night. Along with songs in the key of life. I'm either gonna get over you or I'm gonna blow out my ears. Yeah, you're out there now doing God knows how. And I'm stuck here having a record year.
Oh, I love having a record year. That's what I thought. This was somebody like having a record year, like they accomplish a lot more. And it turns out when I listen to the lyrics, it's about listening to records all year to recover from, it sounded like, his split up, which we were, that's what we were talking about before we went to break. This is Winning at Life, the weekly wrap where you can get your financial fix today for a better financial future.
Yeah, I'm going to need some financial help. My financial planning is about to all be destroyed. I was just flipping through to see if we had any messages come across the Winning It Life with Gregory Ricks Facebook page. And no messages have been sent this episode thus far. However, there's an ad here for the Abita Peach Lager. It's just been announced. Peach beer? I've never had peach beer. But if it's coming from Abita, and just judging what they've done with the strawberries and the blueberry lagers, this may be my favorite beer of all time just from the sound of it. Peach beer.
Peach.
Peach beer.
It's actually on the shelf?
They've announced it. I haven't seen it on the shelf. I just saw an ad for it over here on the Facebook wall for the Winning It Life page.
Let's see. When they started doing these flavors, didn't they do a lemon one at one point? I remember.
That sounds familiar.
I drank one, and I said, I'm not drinking anymore. So I said, I'm giving it to James Parker. He'll drink any Abita beer.
Yeah, so, I'm like the Mikey
said,
of beer.
Yeah, it was good. The blueberry, no. Will I try it? Yeah, I'll take a sampling of the peach when it comes out. I still, my favorite is the Purple Haze with the raspberry flavoring. That's the one that I've.
Oh, total score. And look, yeah. As far as man law goes, you're not supposed to put fruit in with your beer. So if you get like a Blue Moon or a Shock Top and someone puts an orange on it, you have to take it off and throw it away immediately or eat it. You can't leave it there. But if it's already infused with the beer, that's not a violation of man law. So I'm allowed to drink strawberry.
I can't take it off and drop it into the beer?
Well, you're violating man law. You better not let another man see you do that, or it's going to be a demerit. And then at the next meeting, we're going to have a word with you, the man meetings. See, Angie,
it's a good thing I'm too busy for those meetings.
Angie's over there laughing. It's serious business being a guy. I know at all your woman meetings, you're like, okay, it's time to acknowledge pumpkin spice exists again, and we're going to keep this going up until January 1st, and then we have to act like it's never been invented again. I saw pumpkin spice this week. I'm like, here it comes, pumpkin everything for 3 months, and then we have to pretend it doesn't exist the other 9 months out of the year. And if you ask, they're like, well, this is when pumpkins are harvested, and this is when they're in season. Oh, that doesn't work for any other vegetable. Is there any time of year I can't get a bell pepper? All right, we're getting way off topic.
Well, no, but you can, you know, like tomato, Creole tomato season. You have what?
Nope.
There's other fruits and
nope.
vegetables.
Nope. Peach abita. All right, let's see. Oh, yeah. How does this dealing with your financial planning through a divorce? We get this question a lot. How does this affect my Social Security? Can I get benefits under his record? How long do we have to have been married? Also, does this affect his benefits any? What if he passes away, but we were married for 10 years and then now, and what age and what are the rules?
10 years is the whole key there. Be married for 10 years. Was Brad and Angelina married for 10 years?
They were married for 2 years. They got technically married in 2014. Now, they've been together since 2004, but just because they were so cool, it's like, well, we don't want to ruin all the fun with a stodgy old marriage. Well, they really cheated herself out of the Social Security.
It's going to come down to Social Security for them, but marriage, not together, marriage. Having that license for 10 years enables you to draw benefits if that's the best strategy for you when it's time to as well. As far as you married 10 years, divorced, and they die, that's not a negative or positive. You still have the same rights to do so. Death might have shortened their contributions to Social Security, which could affect what you could, because they didn't live longer to put more in. They don't even know. They're not even going to know you're drawing off of their benefit. Let's say you were non-working spouse. You didn't have much benefit, but when you retire, you can draw based upon their benefit, and instead you're drawing $1,500 a month, just throwing a number out there. They won't know it, and it has zero effect on their benefit. James Parker could get married and stay married 10 years, divorce, do it. He can do it 4 times, and the last one divorces after 10 years, and he swears off marriage. And they're all going to draw on his benefit, and he'll never know it.
How does the math work out like that for the trust fund? You know, you have...
That's probably not good.
No.
At times, but that is the law, and that's your right as a spouse.
Well, because I could have 4 times the checks I would have. The same amount I've paid in my entire life, but I have 4 different people drawing that same check instead of just one. One of the reasons I imagine that this whole thing's got to collapse eventually. The math is so upside down on Social Security.
Don't be scaring people.
Into not getting married?
No, into worrying about, this Social Security is going to collapse.
No.
It's not. Look. It's not.
If we don't touch it, it's going to collapse. But they'll make changes along the way, like we do with everything.
One of the key things I've spoke about is it's what been 23, 24 years since they raised the Social Security tax on payroll. And they're going to do it, and it's going to fix it for a long time.
All right. Questions that we've gotten before. Are alimony and child support payments taxable as income for the receiver? Are they deductible for the payer?
Repeat that again.
See, this isn't in any article I read. This is questions we've gotten from the show that I just recalled and typed in on my notes here. Are alimony and child support payments taxable as income for the person who receives them? And are they deductible for the person who pays them, the payer?
They're not taxable, and they're not deductible. Now, look, I'm going to back up, and I probably shouldn't have answered it. I'm not 100% certain on both sides of that, because I know I've seen that question come up on tax returns and such.
If I remember at the time, yeah, that there was no tax impact either way.
Yeah, so I don't know for certain, but that's the situation that, once again, if you're sitting in my office and ask about that, we're going to do a bit of quick research and get back to you and make sure it's verified correct.
How does divorce affect bankruptcy? If husband acquires bankruptcy and he's in that hole for 7 years, that bankruptcy funk, can you like split off from him and have your own little credit system that is not tarnished by that bankruptcy?
It's community, property, state. Even if they set up an account in their name during marriage and you're tied to that account after divorce, they could affect your credit. They file bankruptcy. I don't know how you separate. There's actually legal stuff where you can be married, but you have to do some legal filing to separate yourself financially from that spouse. Wes would know the term, and as some of this probably should be run by him. I believe he's on next week. That's W.J. Blanchard Law, Wes Blanchard, our estate planning attorney. That's where, and I do know that for community property, and that's where you got to make sure you unwind or get those accounts closed. Anything that you, during that marriage you're connected to, good or bad, you get half the fruits, but you get half the debts. They go wreck a car and y'all separated but not done anything legally or anything, and so yeah, and the people have sued me. I've heard tell the future ex-spouses, yeah, you're going to have to, if I get hit on this, you're carrying half of it. Is that BS? Yeah, but
scary.
It's there. That's part of all this. And I tell you what, I would make sure if I was getting a divorce, my advice for that, and I'm speaking from having been through it, is if you're going to do it, you need to get those documents knocked out quickly and start protecting yourself from that point going forward.
Does it matter where you were?
So no other liabilities created.
Does it matter where you were married or where you live? Because me and the hot redhead were married in Texas because we both have a ton of family.
Where you reside.
Dang. So maybe I should go get a house in Pearl, Picayune, just right across the line there.
But you reside here. You're vacation home in Picayune.
No, I mean a primary residence, maybe, just for purposes of the divorce. I'm divorce planning in advance. Just in case something goes wrong,
you may have a tough time.
Divorce planning.
Because you're living here.
Can you try and explain that to your wife? Hey, we need to move to Mississippi. Why? Well, I'm just divorce planning. In case things go south, I want this to be an amicable and easy split for us. Yeah, she'd look forward to that. Oh, sure. That sounds great. Let's just keep going down the road with that. All right, if you have any financial situations, divorce situations, female financial situations especially, not quite sure what to do, you better call Gregory, 504-260-0995. We're going to get back to some financial news, and I have a McDonald's update, Gregory.
McDonald's?
You know, they had the big success last year with the all-day breakfast. They're trying a couple of new things. I'll let you know what's going on with that. I'm James Parker. This is Winning It Live with Gregory Ricks on iHeartRadio.
I wonder how they sound currently. You know, some of those acts, you know, Duran.
They were there last year or 2 years ago? Was that last year?
Last year.
We're talking about the iHeartRadio Music Festival last night and tonight.
I just God, it just didn't sound the same to me as it did in the 80s or hearing them live. And I don't know, maybe they were a little bit tired having to do the tour. You know, when they did the tour, they were in their 20s and all that. Now, you know, a few sailboat accidents, too much partying. And it just didn't quite sound. But I would think these, you know, I would like to think that when you hear them performing live, it's like, yeah, man, that's what I remember.
Our iHeartRadio Music Festival last night, and tonight is the second night. This is Tears for Fears. They're one of the 16 artists that are at the T-Mobile Arena. That T-Mobile Arena, you know how long it's been open, the new one in Vegas there? 70 days now. 170 days. The estimated net worth of the entire lineup, you know, this is a financial show. We have to take a financial angle even when we talk about music festivals. If you lined up all 16 of the artists, took their financial net worth, added it up, $2.5 billion. Sweet Jesus, Gregory Ricks. It's a lot of money.
Can I go back to something?
Go ahead.
Are we still on the other topic? And were you kind of... And many women are not aware they can claim Social Security survivor benefits based on their deceased ex-husband's work record. You know, when we brought that up, that you can do so, you know, it's surprising where I've had discussions with women and they're like, really? I didn't know that? And there's a part of that segment that don't even realize that they're able to take benefits, period, from their ex-spouse. Sometimes I get the worry, well, I don't want to take away from his benefit. And I've heard that as well on there. Survivor benefits for divorced spouses are the same as for widows, providing the marriage lasted, like we've said, 10 years. The same benefit formulas, age requirements, actuarial reductions apply. And if you're unsure, ask. But we just want to make sure that information's out there.
We had a lady call in. You may not remember this. This must have been 4 or 5 years ago. It wasn't that long after we had started the show. If I remember correctly, she was 83, and she had been living off her own piddly Social Security benefit, and she called into this show because we were talking about that, and she said, you mean I could have been drawn off of my ex-husband's this whole time? And she missed, what, 20 years of bigger checks? Because she no one ever told her. She never asked.
Yeah, and look, we've had some other callers in different scenarios, and we made them aware. You need to go down there.
Well, we have fun doing this show. Like, we love it, and this is our job, and this is our business. But for some people, this is going to be a very important little program we're running here. To the phones we go. Wes, another member of the Total Wealth Authority, he's going to be our guest next weekend. Wes, we were just talking about you. What you bringing to the table?
Well, I wanted to cover beneficiary designations on a variety of different vehicles, whether it's life insurance, the IRAs, and kind of talk about how that plays a part in estate planning. We know that it's something that's pretty easily changed and dealt with, but it really can make up for a lot of people a large portion of their estate. So I think it's important to cover in that regard.
Sounds great. All right, Wes, let's keep it quick and moving here. We're kind of running out of time. But Wes Blanchard, he's our estate planning attorney. This is the guy we lean on. We have a partnership. If you need a will, if you need a trust, you need a power of attorney, you know, there's certain things that you can't do without getting an estate planning attorney involved. If you do a reverse mortgage, you have to redo your estate planning. That's our guy. So you'll meet him next weekend. And if you have some of these other more intricate questions that concern estate planning, tune in to next Saturday's show or check the podcast if you're not available. All right, Gregory, let's do a quick recap here of the Wells Fargo situation. We hadn't got to talk about this much on the Saturday edition of the show, but we were all over this on the Daily Wrap edition. $185 million fine. A lot of people were complaining that was just a drop in the bucket for a company that has, what, $34 billion in revenue. That's a slap on the wrist. But it got nice and sort of exciting. A little bit of dramatic theater was had in the congressional hearing this week where some of the videos that have been passed around of this stump CEO getting castigated by various people that made it really popular.
Warren from Massachusetts, I believe it. No, Wisconsin.
No, Elizabeth Warren from Massachusetts.
Okay.
Sure.
She let loose on him. Good thing she act, you know, once again, Congress can shine a light, a very bright one on something like that. Just can't really do anything.
Yeah, these congressional.
He has to really be glad she can't do anything because, oh.
She would kill him.
She would end him.
She would eat his children. She was so mad. Yeah, these congressional hearings, what a waste. Whether it's the right doing it about Hillary's emails, you're not going to get to the bottom of anything. You charge her with a crime. Turn her over to the cops. Oh, the cops said no. Well, if the FBI's not going to do anything, you can't do anything. And then on the other side, you have them beating up these bankers. Oh, I can't believe you guys. You guys what? Charge them with a crime. If they did something illegal, call the cops. Call 911. Charge them with the crime. Have them cuff
them
up.
They're saying... You're still getting the bonuses that exec that's leaving, getting $120 million or some number there. And it basically has come down to it. Yeah, I understand you have a problem with it, but that's not going to be changed. And we even had a caller on the Daily Wrap about that. And I think he's was Wells Fargo stockholder or something. He feels kind of penalized by what they're doing. And, or was he, it may have been they're managing the 401k. It's not going to affect that. But if you're a stockholder, it could affect earnings because this is going to change how they do things. But, you know, you don't, on the exec left, you don't know the structuring of that contract and such. And when you figure out, when they look back, think that maybe they feel bad about it. They had a lot of sales incentives there. But maybe their employees were cheating a little bit to get bonuses. I think they paid that. They're not getting that back.
Well, you know, so the guy got to keep some bonuses. Jamarcus Russell got to keep his bonuses after he failed out of the Raiders. No one seemed too upset. That's just how it goes.
And look, that was massive money.
Yeah, that was a bust, wasn't it?
Oh, it was huge.
Did he have to pay back a nickel of that signing? No, he doesn't. That's part of it. That's the risk you take because the reward on the other end for taking that risk is even bigger than the signing bonus or the little compensation that the CEO gets. Think about whatever Steve Jobs got paid. Like, what do you think his salary was at Apple? Whatever value he brought to Apple, wasn't it more than he got paid?
Absolutely. He was not paid.
He was paid a fraction of the value he brought to that company.
He's rewarded through value in the stock, really, but not through his compensation.
Right. And if you paid this guy, if you paid Steve Jobs, what's this guy make, 100-something million off of during the time that this scam was going on? How much is Steve Jobs worth over his little, especially the second tenure at Apple, worth billions and billions and billions? Did he get paid billions and billions and billions?
No.
But if he had failed and he got to keep all that money, there would be people complaining, oh, look, he drove the company into the ground and then got a golden parachute on his way out. I know, but you don't see the upside of that. The upside's even bigger. The upside is they are the biggest company on the planet. They are the biggest taxpayers on the planet. They're the biggest taxpayers in the United States, in Europe, in Ireland, on the planet, Apple is. Anyway, some follow-up, though, on the Wells Fargo situation is now people are kind of looking around saying, wait a second, is this going on at other banks? Is this going on at my bank? Should we have banks even setting up structures like this, these incentive programs for their employees, now that we know how it can turn out? So I like the conversation that's being had now that we sort of digested the original story of the Wells Fargo situation and moving forward. What do you think about that?
I'm sorry, I was reading the email the listener just sent in, but go ahead again.
The incentive bonuses, you think they're going to try and wipe those out or make it illegal for banks to have incentive programs for their employees?
Well, then that would take Congress, I would think. You're not going to have a committee hearing and that's going to happen. I don't know. Obama's pen can make a lot of things happen, so I don't really know there. But there's always incentives. You just don't want it to show up in a bad way. And, you know, incentives motivate people to do that. But we want it to motivate them to do the right thing, not the wrong thing.
Well, they were fined $185 million. That seems piddly, but you know
how, it's just a ding in
You
the
know
door.
How much they got in fraudulent fees from these ghost accounts? $2.6 million. Maybe the fee was too much. I'm James Parker. This is Winning It Live with Gregory Ricks on iHeartRadio.
Welcome back to Winning at Life, the weekly wrap. I'm your host, Gregory Ricks, along with James Parker. If you need your financial fix, this is the place to get it. The phone number is 504-260-0995. You can email, just like Susie did, gregory@gregoryricks.com. She has a friend. She says we've argued about it several times. The friend says she's not entitled to her ex's Social Security benefit after she retires because she was a school teacher in Louisiana. And then she puts in parentheses, she's afraid of him too. I can imagine her saying that a little quieter voice.
That's not going to have any effect on eligibility, but that is good information to have, yeah.
Now she teaches in another state. And she's 5 years away from retirement and is in the dark as to what her income will be. She notes that's scary and asks if we can answer that question. She continues, I've heard you say several times regarding how Louisiana teacher retirement can mess things up. What's the truth? Your friend did not pay into Social Security while she worked in the state system here. And you have what's called the windfall elimination provision. And it's because some situations in the past was double dipping. So she will take a haircut. So when you say she's 5 years away from retirement, you know, did she spend her first 20 years working in the state system and her last 10 elsewhere where she contributed to Social Security? So the offset might not be completely severe if that had been her only job was in the system. But if she does get to draw some, and she should check and request. You don't let this go by and not go to Social Security and try to get what you deserve. She may be fearful of him, but nobody's going to talk to him. Social Security's not going to talk to him. She's not going to need to. They don't send out, hey, by the way, your exes are all drawing on your benefit. He will never know.
Doesn't affect him. He doesn't have to sign anything. Nothing, right?
Now, they're not going to provide any information on him, but they'll tell her what she's able to draw on that. And that is the truth. There is going to be a haircut, but she is getting credits for working outside of the Louisiana retirement system, which once again did not participate in Social Security, and that's why it's affecting her.
So she is going to get a check from the pension system for being a teacher here. She's going to get a check from Social Security, but the benefits could be truncated.
And we know she's eligible because they were married for 12 years. Just there will be a haircut. Could be a big one, but will be.
Yeah, and sorry about the idea that you're scared of the guy. If you're scared of your ex, there a lot of times there's a very good reason why.
Yeah, but there's nothing to worry about there when applying for Social Security regarding an ex.
That's probably the best part of our response. You don't ever have to deal with that dude again.
Yep.
To the phones we go. Steven Slidell, you're next up on Winning It Live with Gregory Ricks. How can I help you, sir?
I know this is going to sound like a very silly question, but I'm in my early 50s and I've been rat-holing as much cash as I can in my 401k. But my concern is that I've been paying into Social Security, and I've been employed for over 30 years. And the last 10, 15 years, I've actually maxed out on the Social Security benefits. But my question is if my salary drops, how much is that going to impact my Social Security income when I do retire? And I'm 53 right now.
it's going to have some effect, because here's the way Social Security's working for when they project those numbers on your statement. They're basically looking at the income and contribution staying at the same level going forward. So is there going to be some adjustment? Yes. And it's based on, say, the last 35 years of your work record. And it's a tiered formula of about three levels based on how much income you're making, how it's formulated as well. But being you're maxing out and have done so for a long time, it's not going to be that much of an effect.
I just don't know. My biggest concern is that, you know, the house is paid for, the cars are paid for, one kid's out of college and working, the other one's about ready to graduate from college, they have no debt, and we got a son that's about ready to hit college, and, you know, there's only so, and I'm a single-income household and have been for, like, 30 years, so I'm just really paranoid. I think I'll be working until I'm dead, but the other thing is, you know, I'm assuming my wife can draw off my Social Security when I turn legal retirement age, correct?
Correct. Long as she's of age, too.
And doesn't he have to turn his on first?
I want to finish this question.
Go ahead.
Yep. I mean, I don't, like I said, I'm just been pretty bad about retirement planning. Like I said, I've saved a few hundred thousand, but that's not going to be enough to retire on.
Yeah, she will not affect your benefit. I believe that's where you were going with that question about her. She will not affect your benefit, her drawing on it. You won't know whether she is or will unless you and her have a direct conversation about it. But it doesn't matter, and you don't need to talk to her about it. It's none of your business, and it's none of her business, your business. But she cannot impact yours.
We're married for 30 years. I'm not planning on getting divorced, but I just my biggest concern is if something happens to me, can she draw, you know, on my benefits if you know, let's say I get killed in an automobile accident or something like that. I mean,
absolutely.
I mean, my biggest concern is basically, you know, if something happens to me, what happens to her? You know, that's the big thing.
Well, that's the right mindset to have.
Well, did she work for the state of Louisiana? And in the state of Louisiana retirement system. Okay, she's getting your Social Security.
My wife basically chose, she was a school teacher, and that's what made me call. She was a school teacher, and then she quit her job when our first child was born 26 years ago. And ironically, my daughter's a school teacher. So, like I said, just being rather paranoid about her future should she survive me. You know what I mean?
She's going to be able to draw on your benefit.
Okay, well, appreciate it. Thank you, gentlemen.
All right, Steve, call back if you need anything else. Okay, Gregory, I want to pick up this conversation that we had yesterday. Are expensive shampoos better? Now, this started, if you're wondering, this is coming out of left field. We had a report here that said Americans spent $2.1 billion on unleaded plus and unleaded premium when they didn't need it and they got no positive effects from it last year. In fact, that's about the average. $2 billion is what we waste our money on. So then the conversation drifted into what else do we get that you pay a premium for but you don't get a return over the cheaper alternatives? We had a little discussion about shampoos, and our producer here, Angie, did some research. Now, you said the more expensive the shampoo, the better. Is that a fair characterization?
No.
I don't want to pigeonhole you here.
No, I did not say always spend more. That means it's better. That's not the case. But it can cost more and be justifiable if it is better.
Okay, now my point was I go get the dollar shampoo, whether it's Suave or White Rain or what.
Yeah, if it costs more than $5, it's bogus and I don't want to use it.
That's close. Yeah, as far as shampoo goes.
I kind of think it's all soap and it all works.
Yeah.
And you could have more chemical and whatever in it. I maybe want it to be more organic. And whatever I put on my skin soaks into my skin.
Angie?
Well, it's the same idea. I mean, my thought was y'all said $100 for the shampoo and conditioner. And I know those brands. They exist and they're supposed to be awesome. But you probably can get something just as good for maybe $20 or $15. And that's that has the same kind of ingredients that you're looking for. It's just, I don't know. For me, it's now, the name brand.
Are you getting shampoo that, no matter what, it's $118 for that bottle? Or was it some little bottle you paid for? Or was it a really big bottle?
It was not a really big bottle.
Or was this, say, the shampoo and conditioner and combined? Because when you go see, well, I got the $5 bottle of shampoo. Well, it might have been a small bottle, and yeah, it's cheap, but.
I get Suave. I get White Rain. I get the VO5. Whatever's the cheapest at the store. I hope it's all made in the lab.
I moved up to Pantene and Tresemme. So those are like your $10 right. or more.
Well, look, let's go. I want to back up since you brought this again. Now,
we only got 1 minute, y'all.
That's all we need okay. is the hot redhead was buying Rosemary Mint.
Yes.
Particular Aveda brand. And when you're going through it, and then you ask me, have you been into that shower that's at the restaurant in the bathroom?
Your
next
guest
to the
bathroom,
is,
yeah, has $100
and that's
shampoo.
What I have. And I knew all along what he's talking about is the same stuff we use. I really didn't feel sorry for him.
Yeah. Okay. So the early show asked a consumer correspondent, Susan Compton, who is, she asked shampoo expert Paula Begwin, how much is too much to spend on shampoo? And we're both sort of wrong. If you get the super-duper cheap stuff, that's not as good for your hair. The super-duper expensive stuff is a waste of money. The price point where you start to lose the value, the return for your investment, $6. If you're paying more than $6 for a bottle of shampoo, chances are you're not getting any more amenities out of it than the cheaper version.
You happy now?
Gotta go. I'm James Parker. This is Winning It Life with Gregory Ricks, Mortgage Gumbo next in New Orleans. Find us on iHeartRadio.